What's up, everybody? How you doing? Good? Oh, wow, that was pretty bad. Turn to the person next to you and say, hi, how you doing? Hey, what's your name? Good, man. Well, hey, if we have never met before, my name is Josiah. I'm the young adults pastor at this church. And I would love to say, first of all, if you're a young adult in this room, if you're between the ages of about 18 to 29-ish, I know that a bunch of us have been coming to the church for a while, and maybe you haven't quite connected with people very well. Just so you know, the young adult retreats are coming up very soon. They're coming up at the end of this month and at the beginning of next month. We have a college age retreat, so if you're college age, that's for you. And then we have, if you're like mid, late 20s, if you're my age, we have a retreat that's just for us too. All you need to do is scan the QR code that's on the chair and you want to sign up for that. That's a guaranteed way to make friends no matter what phase of life you're in that age bracket. There's people for you, and I'd love to introduce them to you. We are in week 9 of a series of conversations that we've been doing called Rooted. And man, I think I got the best week, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty excited about what we're going to be talking about today. I've been sitting on this conversation for a long time. I've been praying about this message, and I'm really excited to jump into the Bible and talk about what God has to say to us. Today, I just want to ask one question. That's it. I just want to ask one question. And this question, if I'm going to be honest, this is one of the most important questions you can ever answer in your life. And if you can't answer this question meaningfully, you're not going to live a meaningful life. You're not going to have a real impact, and your life really isn't going to be about anything substantial. The question that I want to talk about today is this: what is the actual mission of your life? What is the actual mission of your life? If you're a follower of Jesus, Jesus actually tells us what our mission should be. And I know that a bunch of us in this room are exploring Jesus and checking that out, and that's incredible. And so what I want to tell you is what Jesus is all about, and if you decide to follow Jesus, what your mission should be. But if you're a follower of Jesus, Jesus has actually made what our mission should be actually very clear. If you got a Bible or a phone, we're going to have it on the screen. We're going to be hanging out in Matthew chapter 28. That's where we're going to be this morning. But let me give you a little context to where we're at. So Matthew chapter 28 is the end of a biography all about Jesus' life. And where we pick up in this story, this is right after Jesus is resurrected from the dead. So his followers are looking at Jesus and they're like, Jesus, we will run through a wall, you know, for you. We'll do anything for you. We trust you. Like, they're stoked because they thought Jesus was dead. They thought all hope was lost. He came back from the dead. We're like, we believe everything that you have ever said about yourself. And so what Jesus does is he calls all of his followers together up on this mountain. At the time, he probably had about 120 followers, something like that. He calls them all together and he gives them one final instruction before he goes to heaven and while they're still on earth. And here's what he says, Matthew chapter 28, verse 18. Then Jesus came to them and said, listen, guys, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. Jesus looks at all of his guys and says, listen, I died for you. I have defeated death for you. You are rescued from hell. You're rescued from your mistakes. You're rescued from sin. You're rescued. You are safe once and for all. Like, I've done all this for you. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. I am God. Everything belongs to me. And so I have a mission for you. And here's what it is. While you are on earth, if you got 60 years left, if you got 10 years left, if you got 100 years left, whatever, as long as you are still on earth until we meet again in heaven, I want you to be dedicated to going and making disciples. I want this to be the absolute primary, firstmost task in your life. Now, what is a disciple? Well, a disciple is someone who follows Jesus. So Jesus is saying, in the same way I taught you how to follow me, I want you to go in the world and teach other people how to follow me as well. Here's what Jesus is saying. If you are a follower of Jesus and you are still on this planet, so everybody in this room that calls themselves a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus and you're still on this planet, your life on earth is meant to be dedicated to sharing Jesus so that other people can be rescued. Now, if you were to tell me this a few years back when I first became a Christian, I would look at all this and say, well, Jesus said a lot of stuff, you know? Like, how come this one is like the main thing? you know, there's a lot of things that Jesus told his people to do in the Bible. Why is this like the task above all tasks? Love God, love people, go and make disciples. But here's what I found. When I actually started reading the Bible for myself, and not just relying on what other people had said, I found that Jesus actually talks about this way more than other people told me that he talked about it. In fact, there's four biographies of Jesus' life in the Bible. All four of them end the same way, with him gathering people up and giving a different version of the same mission. So in the book of Mark, Jesus ends it by saying this. He says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe is in danger. They will be condemned." At the end of the book of John, Jesus says this. He says, "As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. In the same way God sent me from heaven to rescue you, I am sending you into the edges of the planet to rescue everybody else." In the book of Acts, which is really the ending of the book of Luke that used to be one volume, here's what Jesus says. He gathers everybody up right before he goes to heaven, and he says, "You will receive power when the Holy Spirit of God comes on you, and you will be my witnesses." It's actually a key word. You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and then in Judea and Samaria, and then to the ends of earth. Jerusalem, the city that we're in right now, Judea and Samaria, the next city's over, and then all the way to the ends of the earth. And every historian that has ever studied Christianity, early Christianity, whether they're a Christian or not, every historian has always looked and said, Jesus' followers understood that this was the primary task. There was no confusion in the early church as to what the mission was whatsoever. Jesus' disciples and his followers, they would go into a town, and no matter how hostile that town was or receptive that town was, they would walk up to people and they would tell them about Jesus. They would build relationships, teach them how to follow Jesus, and then they move on to the next town and then tell those people, and they'd start churches along the way. And when the government tried to persecute them, or when other religious groups came after them, or no matter what kind of suffering happened to them, the followers of Jesus were all so, not just the 12 disciples, every follower of Jesus was so determined to do this because that's the last thing Jesus told us to do. He told us we're all going to heaven. He told us he had rescued us, but he also told us that we have 60 years left, 10 years left, 100 years left. We need to go and make disciples. If you're a follower of Jesus and you're still on this planet, your life on earth is meant to be dedicated to sharing Jesus with others so that they can be rescued. That is your primary mission. But the inverse is also true. If sharing Jesus is not the primary mission of your life, either you're brand new to Christianity and you've never heard that before, and so that's fine, or I don't know that you're actually following Jesus. If this is not like the primary task, like the thing that I wake up every day, like this is the thing on my mind. Either I've never heard this before and I'm new and I'm learning, that's great. Or maybe I'm not as changed by God as I actually think that I am. I want you to imagine that you were on an airplane with 99 other people, 100 people on this airplane, right? And so you're flying over the Pacific Ocean, and through some freak accident, the jets go out on the airplane, and so you crash into the middle of the Pacific Ocean with 99 other people. And so you and these 99 other people are all in the water. There's no flotation devices, so everybody's just, you know, kind of doggy paddling, trying to survive. And everyone knows there's no one for miles and miles and miles, hundreds of miles, no one's there. And so you're treading water, and you're trying to stay alive, but you know that you're going to drown. I mean, if no one comes, we are going to die. And so you start screaming as loud as you can, "Help me, help me. Will someone help me?" Just hoping that maybe someone out there could possibly hear your cry. "Help me, help me." And this goes on for hours, and no one comes, and you know that the end is near. But right before all hope is lost, you look out into the distance, and you see just like this little speck, and the speck gets bigger and bigger, and you start realizing there's a boat that's coming towards you. And you look, and you realize the guy driving the boat, there's like compassion in his eyes, there's kindness in his eyes. And you realize it's Jesus driving this boat. And he's driving this boat right up to you. And there's you and 99 other people, but the boat comes right up to you. You're the first one he comes up to. And he looks at you and he says, "I heard your cry. I sold everything. I did whatever I had to do to get here. I heard your cry. I'm here to save you because I love you." And you're in the water and you're thinking, "Thank you, Jesus. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad you love me so much. Thank you for rescuing me." And so he reaches out his hand to you with a smile in his eye, and you reach right back, and he says, "Listen, Do you love me? Do you give your life to me? Absolutely, I give my life to you. So he pulls you into the boat and you fall on your knees. Thank you, thank you. I love you. I'll do anything for you. And Jesus looks at you and he says, listen, I did all this because I love you. But he looks and he says, do we care about the same things? Absolutely, we care about the same thing. I mean, this changed me. Do we love the same thing? Are we after this? Do we have the same heart? Absolutely, we have the same heart. And Jesus says, good. Well, here's what I want to do then. I actually want you to drive the boat now. For the next 48 hours or so, I just want you to take the wheel. I want you to drive the boat. And so you take the wheel, and the first thing you do is you turn around and you sail straight home. 99 other people still in the water. They're drowning. Nope. I got to get back to my kids. Yeah. I've been gone for a long time. My bills are overdue. I got to get back home right now. And you let these other 99 people that you are also in the water with, same position as you, no more deserving than you are, you let them all die. Now, let me ask you a question. Who would ever do that? The answer is no one. No one would ever do that. And that's exactly the point. No one who has ever truly been saved by Jesus would ever sail home before they had rescued every single person that they possibly could at any cost to themselves. But I'm gonna be honest with you. I think there's a lot of people in this room this morning, and that's exactly what you're doing, which begs the question, are you sure you've been transformed by Jesus the way you think you have? And if I'm being completely honest, are you sure you ever actually got pulled out of the water? Because no one who would get pulled out of the water and understood what God did would ever leave the people around them in the dust. Now, before we move forward, we have to ask a very important question. I think this is the question that's on everybody's minds. When Jesus talks about sharing him, what does he actually mean by that? You know, like, what does it look like to actually share Jesus with somebody? I remember when I first started following God and people would talk about this mission, I would always feel guilty. Because I don't know why I can do well on stage, but I'm definitely pretty introverted. And for some reason, like if I go, I can go to introduce myself to someone at Walmart or whatever, you know, I fall apart. I don't know why that is. And so the idea of telling other people about Jesus, it was something that I am just naturally bad at, if I'm being honest with you. And I would feel really guilty, and I feel like, you know, there's something wrong with me in my relationship with God because this was not a frequent thing in my life. And if that's you, I get it. I talking about Jesus felt very unnatural to me. I didn't want to shove my beliefs down anybody else's throat. I didn't want to lose my relationship with anybody like that. And so I stayed quiet for years. But when I look back on this phase of my life, all of this honestly stemmed from a misunderstanding of what Jesus meant by go and make disciples. I don't think I really understood what he was after. Here's what you have to remember. Jesus asked me to be his witness, not a salesperson. Jesus asked me to be his witness, not a salesperson. There's a big difference. When most of us think about sharing Jesus, we think of a sales pitch. That's the dude on Instagram that just like walks up to people and talks to atheists on the street, which is fine. That's the girl with the podcast that can answer every spiritual question. That's the guy with the megaphone that sits outside of Chipotle. They're always out, you know, every other week or so. You know, and so no wonder when you hear somebody say like, share Jesus at your work or in your neighborhood or whatever, you're like, bro, I work at an insurance company. You know, they don't let megaphones in. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how I would ever naturally elevator pitch someone the message of Jesus. So my wife Sarah and I, we live in a house that has a lot of windows, which means especially on like nicer days like today, every door-to-door salesman knows exactly when we're home. And this is the absolute bane of my existence. So a while back, we were having a date night and we're just trying to, you know, hang out or whatever after a long day. And this door-to-door set, you see them, they're always like kind of creeping by, you know? And he walks by and he can see in the windows that we're home. And so he knocks on the door and I'm just eating spaghetti and I'm like, man, maybe if I just ignore him, he'll go away. But he could see through the windows, you know? And so he sees through the windows that we're home and he keeps knocking. And I'm like, okay, I guess I gotta talk to this guy. So I open up the door and he's selling like insect repellent. That's what he does. He's like, you know, insect removal services. And he's like, hey, would you like some insect removal services? I'm like, no, I'm good. But this guy was so well-trained, man. He had a memorized response for every single thing that I said. So he's like, do you want some insect removal services? I said, no. And he looks at me and goes, well, then what insect removal services do you have? I go, well, I don't have any insect removal services. Believe it or not, this was not the top thing that was on my mind. You know, and then he looks around and he's like, ah, so I see you haven't lived at this house very long then. You haven't lived in here through the fall time. There's a lot of spiders in the fall time. Now, my wife has the worst arachnophobia of any person I've ever met in my life. So he just nailed it. Like, he didn't know how well he nailed it. You know, and but every single, it was like I was playing chess with this guy. Every single thing that I said, he had this perfect response for. Honestly, the conversation just ended by me, like, slowly closing the door in his face while he kept talking. I'm like, how you like them windows now, you know? And I locked him out of the house. Now, listen. I think that's what most of us think when we think about sharing Jesus. Like this unnatural, forced, elevator pitch, memorized response kind of a thing. And there's two problems with that. First, the vast majority of us do not have a memorized response for every question. And so even the thought, like I think that's a lot of people's worst fears. What if I get asked something I don't know the answer to? But I think there's a second problem that's a lot worse, honestly. The second problem is my interaction with that salesman was so disingenuous. So disingenuous. He didn't care about me. He didn't care about my family. He was using me to hit his sales quota. I wanted to buy his insect repellent just to spray it in his eyes. You know what I mean? Like, I was so frustrated with this guy because he was using me to hit his sales quota. And I know that there's probably a lot of people in this room, and you're not a Christian, and you felt like Christians have maybe witnessed to you in the past, but they weren't doing it because they cared about you. They were doing it because they were trying to win like brownie points for God and hit their heavenly sales quota or something like that. Everybody listen to me. This is not what Jesus had in mind. Not even in the slightest. Jesus didn't call you to be a salesperson. He called you to be his witness. Now let's talk about this word for a second. What is a witness? All a witness is someone who sees something firsthand. All a witness is someone who witnessed something. They saw it with their own eyes. I want you to imagine that you're in a courtroom and you're being called as a witness, and there's been a murder, right? And you're being called as a witness in this courtroom. When you're up in the witness booth, is it your job to know everything about the case at hand? No. Is it your job to know all about like forensic science and how DNA sampling works and that's how they got the fingerprint and this? No, of course not. Is it your job to know all about American law? No, you actually don't even have to know the laws. Is it your job to speak elegantly and beautifully and professionally? No, absolutely not. What's your only job as a witness? Your only job is to tell the room what you have personally seen. Your only job is to tell the room in your personality, in your voice, what you have personally seen. A witness is someone with a personal story about Jesus rescuing them. A witness is someone with a personal story about Jesus rescuing them. In John chapter 9 in the Bible, there's a perfect example of this. What happened was there was a man who was born blind. And so for 30, 40 years of his life, this guy was blind. Everyone in his town knew he was blind. He was always on the street corner begging because he was blind. He couldn't work a job. And one day, Jesus walks up to this guy and he heals the blind man. And now the blind man, for the first time in his life, he can see everybody clearly. And so he's walking around and he's dancing and he's all excited about this. Well, it turns out the leaders of that town, the religious leaders, they hated Jesus. And they were trying to track Jesus down in order to kill him. So the leaders come up to this formerly blind man, this guy that can see, and they start drilling him with questions to try and get some kind of question that would somehow implicate Jesus. And so they ask him, they're like, hey, is Jesus the Son of God? Now here's the problem. The formerly blind man met Jesus 10 minutes ago. He knows nothing about Jesus. So they're like, is Jesus the Son of God? He's like, I have no idea. And then they ask him, what do you think about what Jesus says about the cultural hot topics right now? What do you think about Jesus's more controversial teachings? He goes, I don't even know what Jesus's stance on any of those things are. And then they ask him, is Jesus a sinner? Do you think that Jesus is a sinner? And here's the man's most baller line. Here's his response. I don't know whether he is a sinner, the man replied, but I know this. I was blind and now I can see. Here's what I do. I don't know any of that, but here's what I do know. I was blind 15 minutes ago, and now I can see. That is a witness. He just relayed what God did in his life personally. Listen, Jesus is not asking you to prove how the Bible is perfect and it has no mistakes. He's not asking you to argue the ins and outs of Christian theology. He's not asking you to tell your non-Christian friends that they need to follow Christian morality. He's not asking you to work for the church, and he's definitely not asking you to speak elegantly and professionally. And he's not asking you to speak any differently than you speak every day when you're talking about what you had for breakfast yesterday. Jesus is just asking you to share your personal story. He's just asking you to share your personal story. And here's what's amazing about our culture right now. Our culture is so receptive to this. Most people think if they bring up Jesus that people are going to get all mad or whatever. But the truth is, I just was reading a survey this morning. They did a survey that they found 80% of non-churched Americans would go to church if just someone invited them. You know what I mean? The fear is way more in the Christians than it is in the non-Christians. And people are so open to your story because our culture values people's story. They want you to speak your truth, right? Your story is authentic, personal, and in many ways, irrefutable. Your story is authentic, personal, and in many ways, irrefutable. I was talking to a friend who had just started following Jesus the past year. So she was brand new to this whole thing. And here's what she said. She said, listen, I don't know much about the Bible or anything like that. I'm brand new to this whole thing. But here's what I do know. Before I knew Jesus, I had crippling anxiety. I mean, I couldn't get out of bed in the morning. This was plaguing my life. And listen, I still struggle with anxiety here or there, but the moment I accepted Jesus, my panic attacks went away. They were gone. Now listen, her friends might not want to know about her stance on X, Y, and Z, but they are going to want to know where she found that peace. Your story might be something like this. It might be something like, listen, I don't know much about religion, whatever. But here's what I do know. Before I knew Jesus, I hated my dad. And that was a burden I carried all day, every day. When you hate one person, you slowly start getting bitter against other people too. And so this was a weight on my shoulders. But when I met Jesus, not only did he teach me how to forgive my dad, he taught me how to actively love my dad, even though my dad does nothing but hurt me. Listen, people in your life might not want to know about your random opinion on this or that, but they want to know where you found that freedom. I have another friend, and his story goes like this. He says, listen, my struggles are still here. I still fall into pornography. I still struggle with depression. I still make really stupid decisions that have hurt a lot of people. But now that I know Jesus, here's the difference. I know I'm forgiven. And the more I realize that I'm forgiven, the more those other things are slowly being healed. But I know that it doesn't matter how good or bad I do, I am loved just the same. And listen, people want to know how he found his confidence, even though he kind of has nothing going on in his life that would give him confidence. Because no one in our culture knows how to have their head up high when they fail. So listen, if you want to know how to share Jesus regularly, you know, like, listen, man, when the disciples are going town to town, they're sharing Jesus often. When Jesus said, go and make disciples, I really don't think he had in mind. Every 2 years when the stars align and my buddy asked me for the reason of the hope within me, I'm going to, that's not what he had in mind. He was thinking like, you know, like every week, you know, maybe a couple times a week, very often. I don't know, there's no set frequency, but he's thinking this would happen all the time. If that's not a reality in your life, if you don't have a ton of stories of sharing Jesus with people, let me give you some quick tips to show you how to just start sharing Jesus pretty frequently. Here's the first one. Start with the 10 people you see every week. Start with the 10 people you see every week. You know, so many of us, when we imagine sharing Jesus, we imagine pulling up to like some random homeless person on the side of the road. And if God asks you to do that, that's awesome and you should go for that, absolutely. But if we're being honest, all of us have about 10 to 15 people that don't know Jesus, and your kids don't count, 10 to 15 people that don't know Jesus that you see almost every single week. And those are the people that God has entrusted to you. He's put those people in your life for the very specific purpose of you sharing Jesus with them. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And so start with those people right there. Here's the second quick tip. When you talk about your life, don't edit out the God stuff. I think this is what trips us up. When you talk about your life, don't edit out the God stuff. On Monday, so tomorrow morning, when you go to work, somebody's probably going to ask you how your weekend was. And here's what you're going to respond. I went to this gathering yesterday morning with these people, and we talked about some really cool stuff. You know, that's how, when most of us go and talk about our lives, we filter out all the most important things. One of the things I've learned from my wife, who's incredible at leading people to Jesus, she's not this great speaker, she's not like the super gifted evangelist, but she's led a lot of people to Christ. What I've learned from her is when somebody asks me a question, I just answer them honestly. And I'm not waiting, like I'm not trying to filter out what they can or can't understand. You know, when some of you guys are football fans, I'm not a football fan at all. And when I sit down with a football fan, you guys just start using terms and throwing out names. And you're talking about all this. I have no idea what you're talking about. And you're not embarrassed about this at all. But I'm interested because you're interested. And so Sarah would say, you know, when somebody asked me about my weekend, I'm like, oh, it was amazing. I went to church yesterday, and they were talking about bringing the gospel message to as many people as possible because God loves the world so much, he's trying to rescue everybody. And she says, when I start talking like that, I can see my friends be like, okay, all right. But she said, when I do that every day, or when I do that every other day, slowly they start to pick up on it. And then I become the person that when someone has a question or when we have an opportunity to have a longer conversation, those conversations are happening to me all of the time. Here's another one. When someone asks you how you're doing, answer the question honestly. Dude, I'm really struggling. If I'm being honest, like the finances aren't great. But I've been learning to try and talk to God about my finances. And God has been teaching me that I don't need what the culture says that I need to be happy and that God's going to provide. Just answer that question straight up, whether they can track it or not. I bet you most of us have an opportunity to share Jesus every day or every other day. And we're passing it up because we're filtering out all the most important content. There's the second quick tip. Stop doing that. And here's the third quick tip. Don't pre-decide who can handle it and who can't. Don't pre-decide for someone else who can handle it and who can't. As soon as I said, start with the 10, 15 people in your life that don't know Jesus, all of us just filtered out probably 4 or 5 people. And you go, well, my sister, we don't really get along. Well, this person has this sign in their yard, so I guess, you know, they're just hopeless. Well, this person would never be receptive. And what you're doing when you're doing that is you're playing the role of God. It is not our job to determine how someone responds or how someone doesn't respond. It's our job to share it with everybody and give everybody equal access to the Savior that we don't even deserve to know. Now, let me tell you something about God. God's favorite trick is saving the least expected person. That's his favorite trick. So I run this ministry collective. Our ministry is built off of lost causes. Like that is 80% of the room. The person that no one ever thought would come to Jesus in a million years. If you're being honest with yourself, the real reason you're not sharing Jesus with that person is not because they're unreceptive. Normally, it's because you're insecure. And so don't let your insecurities determine who God does and doesn't want to save, because the scriptures say that God wants to save everybody. Now, those are 3 helpful tips. Can I just be honest? Can I just be honest? I don't think the main reason we don't share Jesus with people is because we don't know how. And I don't think the main reason we don't share Jesus with people is because of a lack of opportunities. If I'm just being honest, the main reason we don't share Jesus with people is because your life mission has never actually changed. The main reason we don't share Jesus with people is because the daily mission of my life has never actually shifted the way that Jesus told me it should shift. So I have a friend who works at a very big, growing, successful company in Akron. I won't say what the company is, but you would all know what this company is. And he's a young guy, and he's doing really well, and he's getting a lot of offers in this job, and he's very, very good at his job. But every single morning, my friend wakes up with the same prayer, and he says this to God. He says, God, I know that you have sent me to this company not to be successful, not to make money, and not to cause the company to grow. I know that the number one reason you have sent me to this company is because the other people in this company do not know you. And you want me to share who you are and your love for these people in the company. And so every single day, and he works his butt off because no one listens to the lazy guy, right? So he works his butt off. But every single day he says, my task number one, the number one thing I'm looking for is not a new sale. The number one thing I'm looking for is opportunities to tell someone about Jesus. Jesus, every day he prays, Jesus, would you give me an opportunity to talk to at least one person? And then he'll say, if that means I get passed up for a promotion, so be it. If that means for some reason I get fired, I don't know why he would get fired, but if for some reason it came down to that, so be it, because I know why I'm here. You sent me into this company for this reason. Now, he had a goal. His goal was to share Jesus with every single person. And one day he realized that he had accomplished his goal. every person that was on his floor that he interacted with on a regular basis with his work, he realized that he had at least a 1 to 2 hour conversation, individual conversation, with every single one of those people about the gospel in a way that personally made sense to them. And multiple people from his company have come to know Jesus and are a part of our church right now. This is all, he's only worked there for 2 years. This is just within 2 years. This has all happened. And he's not an elegant speaker, man. He's not like super friendly, you know, he's not, that's not his thing. But that is absolutely his goal. But he wasn't done. Because it turns out that there was a floor above his floor. He had shared Jesus with everyone on his floor. But the floor above him was where all the executives were. And he didn't have any meetings with the executives, but he wanted to bring Jesus to the entire company. And so he prayed and prayed and was like, God, how can I bring, you know, obviously the status difference between him and the executives was astronomical. How can I bring Jesus to the executives that are upstairs? And he prayed and prayed. And one day he called me and he said, Josiah, I gotta tell you about something. I've been asking God about this, and for the past several weeks now, every single day, God has put the same thing on my heart, and I am absolutely terrified. I'm like, what is it? He goes, well, my boss, my direct report, who is upstairs with the executive, he claims to be a Christian. He doesn't talk about it, he doesn't share it with anybody, but like he says that he's a Christian. And I have felt the Holy Spirit tell me every single day, you need to talk to your boss. And you need to tell him that I, God, have told him he needs to share his faith with everybody else. He needs to make the mission of his life the mission that he claims, the mission I actually gave him. And my friend's talking to me on the phone, and he says, Josiah, I've never been more afraid to have a conversation in my entire life. This is absolutely terrifying. And so he sets up an appointment with his boss. He's like, hey, can I talk to you about something personal? The boss says, absolutely. You know, sets it a couple weeks in advance. He's sweating, you know. The day finally comes. He's shivering. You know, he sits down with his boss, and his boss asks him, hey, what's on your mind? And my friend, shaking. I mean, he's down here. He's up here, right? My friend, absolutely shaking, says, hey, I need to tell you about something. He says, from the moment I took this job, I've never actually been here for the company. From the moment I take this job, I'm here because God sent me here as a missionary to share Jesus with every other person. And I just want to let you know, I know that you're a Christian. I've been able to share Jesus with every single person on my floor. But I have felt God put on my heart that we're not done. We still have the upstairs to reach. And I know that I don't have any meetings with any of those people, but I know that you're a Christian and that you meet with those people all the time. And so God is telling me to tell you that you need to share Jesus, the love of Jesus, what God has done in your life, with all the executives that you work with. Now, as soon as he said that to his boss pulls out all the excuses, all the excuses. The first thing his boss says, well, here's what you don't understand. I don't tell people about Jesus with my words. I tell people about Jesus with my actions. I don't know why people in their 50s love this one. I can't tell you why, but I don't tell people about Jesus with my words. I tell people with my actions. And my friend looks at his boss and he goes, listen, that's great, but that's not what Jesus asked us to do. Romans chapter 10 says, how can they believe unless they hear, and how can they hear unless someone tells them? It's awesome that you're doing it through your words. That's great, but be my witness. That means actually speak about something. Besides, it's not working. You've worked here for 10 years. You know, no one has come to know Jesus because of this. It's not working. Well, then his boss pulls out the handbook, and the copy of the company handbook in his desk. He pulls out the handbook and he flips over to the like religious tolerance page or whatever, and he reads a little excerpt about, you know, having religious conversations. And he says to my friend, he says, well, God would never ask me to do anything that goes against the company handbook. God would never ask me to do something that dishonors, you know, the people around me. And listen, we can laugh at that, but honestly, I think we give ourselves that kind of excuse all the time. Basically, God would never ask me to be in an uncomfortable situation, you know, ever. And so he reads that, and my friend looks at him, and shaking, my friend goes, that's not true. When Jesus' disciples were going from town to town to town, the governments were telling them, you need to stop, it's against the law. And they loved the people that worked for the government, and they served the people that worked for the government, and they said, we're not gonna listen to that, because we serve a higher master. And they were willing to get fired, and they were willing to get in trouble, and they were willing to even die, to the point of death. That is not true. And my friend looked at his boss, shaking, and here's what he said. When you decided to follow Jesus, you chose a different boss, and you chose a different mission. When you decided to follow Jesus, you chose a different boss, and you chose a different mission. And if you're not willing to pick up the cross that Jesus picked up for you, you can't say that you're following him. Now, let me ask every person in this room right now, are you sure you've changed your mission? Are you sure? Are you sure that you've changed your mission? How do I know if I've actually changed my mission or not? Like, how can I actually tell? Well, let me run through a couple questions. Here's the first question. When I'm deciding what job to take or where to live or what neighborhood to move into or whatever, is the number one factor on my mind, where can I tell the most people about Jesus? Because for the early church, that was it. That was enough. It wasn't, typically when we're making decisions, it's like income, how much PTO do I get? When it comes to living situations, you're like, oh, let's avoid the sketchy neighborhood. You live in Akron, you're gonna live. But you know what I mean? Like, let's avoid those kind of places. You know, but for the follower of Jesus, the number one thing on your mind is, where is God sending me as a missionary? Where can I share the most people about Jesus? If that means losing money, so be it. Here's the second question. Does everyone around me know that Jesus is my ultimate master? Would the people in your neighborhood be surprised if they knew the number one mission of your life was to share the gospel with them? Would they be shocked about that? Would the people in your life be surprised to find out that you're a Christian? And number three, am I waiting for people to ask me about Jesus or am I asking them? Am I waiting for people to ask me about Jesus or am I asking them? Number four, am I willing to sacrifice my reputation, my income potential, my personal comfort, and family security? Listen, 99.9% of the conversations are gonna go great. I'm just being honest with you. But am I willing to sacrifice my reputation, income potential, personal comfort, and family security? This past weekend, I was hanging with some friends, and we were having dinner, and somehow we got talking about trying to share Jesus. And I have one friend, and she just started this new job at a nail salon, and she legit loves Jesus. And she said, listen, I just started this new job at this nail salon. I have all these new coworkers, and I want to share Jesus with them. Like, that's really what's on my mind every day. But I don't want to be like the corny Jesus girl, you know? Like, I kind of want to be like a little more in the group before I'm like the corny Jesus girl. And she threw that out there, and one of the people sitting there, my wife Sarah was not there, but one of the people sitting at dinner was Sarah's old boss, Steph. And Steph was led to Jesus by Sarah when they worked together. And so they worked together, Sarah led Steph to Jesus, and now Steph is sitting there. And Steph speaks up to this girl that works in the nail salon, and she said, hey, can I just say something? She's new to following Jesus, but she said, can I just say something? Sarah, at our workplace, she was the Jesus girl. Like, for sure, she was the Jesus girl. And she wasn't corny, and she wasn't, ever judgmental or telling people how to live their life, and she didn't have, like, a Christian Instagram account that she was trying to put. It was nothing like that. She worked very hard, but she was the Jesus girl for sure. Like, when people talked about her, they knew, if I'm going to talk to Sarah, I'm going to have a Jesus conversation. But then Steph said, but I would have never come to know Jesus if she wasn't willing to do that. I would have never come to know Christ if she wasn't willing to do that. In other words, she sacrificed her reputation for my soul. Are you willing to do that? Which leads me to the next one. When was the last time I actually told someone about Jesus? When was the last time I actually told someone about Jesus? And I mean actually, not a Facebook post, not I prayed in front of people, not I mentioned God in a conversation. I mean like a sit down, heart to heart, personal conversation, to my heart to their heart. When was the last time I actually told someone about Jesus? Guys, I just gotta be honest with everybody. Some of us in this room have been Christians for years. So if you're a newer Christian, you're off the hook for this next section. But some of us in this room have been Christians for years, decades even. Some of us have been going to this church for years. If you prayed every day for opportunities to share Jesus in your neighborhood or with your family or with your friends or at work, and if you actually made that your number one priority, you would get to share Jesus all the time. I'm not saying it would be absolutely every day, but you would have a lot of stories. You would have a lot of stories. So if you're not meaningfully sharing Jesus with people on the regular, it's probably not because there's a lack of opportunity. It's probably because it's not your actual priority. You're lying to yourself. It's probably not because of a lack of opportunity. It's probably because it's not your actual priority. Listen, I have seen the most introverted people the most socially awkward people, the most biblically uneducated people, bring others to Jesus left and right, and I see that every single week. Why? Because it's not about who's the most talented when you're speaking authentically. It's not about who's the most talented. It's about who's the most determined. And these guys are looking and saying, I have to share with my friends what Jesus has done in my life because I want Jesus to do the same thing in their life that he's doing in mine. It's all motivated by love. Some of us have been going to this church for years, decades even, and not even once, have you sat next to somebody that you brought in from your work, from your neighborhood, whatever, that didn't know Jesus. Now listen, maybe everybody you share Christ with is turning you down. And that's great. Maybe everyone you share Christ with is going to a different church, and that's great. But I don't think that's most of us. And so my question is, like, are you sure your heart is where you say it is? Are you sure your heart has pivoted because of the rescue mission of Jesus in your own life? Now, here's where this all boils down to. Some of us in this room are lying to ourselves about where we're actually at. Others of us in this room are like sincere. Like you're like, I really want to share Jesus. I just really don't know how, and I really get nervous, but I really, really want to do that. The solution to both of those situations is exactly the same. Let me give you the solution. Here you go. When I realize how much it cost Jesus to save me, I won't be able to shut up about his love. You want the solution? Here you go. When I realize how much it cost Jesus to save me, I won't be able to shut up about his love. You know, if someone came up to me and said, hey, Josiah, your dad paid off a debt for you. How grateful would I be? Well, it depends on the debt, right? If I found out that I had an overdue Netflix bill, and Netflix, Ted Sarandos, was about to cancel my subscription personally, and my dad goes, not on my watch. And so my dad pulls out his credit card and he pays the, you know, $12 or whatever it is, and he pays my Netflix bill. If I found that out, I would look at my dad and say, wow, dad, thank you. Man, that was really kind of you. Thank you. I know you love me. That's incredible. But if I found out that my mortgage payment was overdue, and I was about to get in legal trouble because of this, and my dad pulled out his credit card, and he paid my mortgage payment, and he said, don't worry about it, son. Don't worry about it. I would look at my dad and say, wow, dad, thank you. I know you love me. Thank you so much. I cannot believe, that is so generous. I can't believe you would do that. But if I found out that the leader of a cartel was trying to kill me because of money that I owed him and mistakes that I had done, and this cartel leader was absolutely out for blood, and my dad found out about this whole interaction, and my dad went up to the leader of the cartel and said, listen, whatever he owes, whatever you're going to do to him, do it to me instead. Just don't touch my kid. Whatever, just do it to me instead. And so what that leader did is they waterboard my dad. And they pull out all his fingernails. You know that torture where they put the splints up? They do that to him. And they just keep punching him and stabbing him. And they stab him so much they get him right up to the point of death, but he's still somehow hanging on. And then on top of all that, my dad empties out all of his savings, all of the money that he has. He sells off his house. He sells off his property. He sells off his car. And he gives every single penny that he has to this cartel leader to pay off my debt. And the whole time they're punching him, he says, do whatever you want to me, just do not touch my son. Do not touch my son. If I found that out and I saw my dad all bloodied and bruised, and my dad just takes his hand, shaken, puts his hand on my shoulder and says, son, don't worry about it. I love you. Don't worry about it. If he did that, I would fall on the ground weeping and say, dad, how could I ever repay you? What could I possibly do for you to show you how much I love you? Thank you, thank you, thank you. I know that you love me. Guys, I'm gonna be real. I think most of us believe that Jesus saved us from an overdue Netflix bill. And that's not true. I was drowning in my sin, you know? From all the mistakes, from all the selfishness, I owed a debt I could not pay. And my Father in heaven volunteered. My God volunteered and said, do whatever you want to me, I'll pay it. Just don't touch my kid. And so they took God, and they beat him, and they spat on him, and they tortured him, and they put pegs through his wrists and through his legs, and they hung him up on a cross to suffocate, barely hanging on, dripping blood. And the whole time that Jesus was up there, Jesus kept saying with compassion in his eyes, do whatever you want to me. It's fine. I'll pay it. Do whatever you want to me. Just do not touch my kid. That is how much God loves you. When Jesus was hanging on the cross, he had your face on his mind. If you were the only person that existed and every other person stopped existing, you were the face that was on his mind. And if you knew that the God of the universe did that for you because your debt was so high, you wouldn't be able to shut up about it. And so if you found out that God had another kid that was drowning in the water that he also died for, that he loves just as much, the first thing you would do after this whole thing, you'd jump right into the water and save that kid. If you found out that God had a daughter that was being trafficked out there, you would turn into Liam Neeson faster than Liam Neeson. And you would run, and no matter what it costs, no matter how badly it hurt, you would do anything. Why? Because you know that you would never even be able to repay God 1% of what he did for you. And so when Jesus looks at you and says, go and make disciples, I'm going to let you drive the boat. I'm going to spend the rest of my life, if I got 5 years, 60 years, 100 years, I don't know, but I'm going to spend every single minute of that trying to the best of my ability and all of my stupidity, trying to sail around and save as many people as possible. Why? Because as God has loved me, as the Father sent Jesus, as God has loved me, that's how I want to love the people around me. I have a mission, and obviously, I can't save anyone's soul, but what I can do is I can tell them about the one who can. And that is the mission of my life, because I'm already secure in heaven. That is why I'm here. A while back, I was going through, honestly, just a rough season in my relationship with God, and I felt like God was very distant. And if I'm being just keeping it real right now, I'm kind of in the same season right now, you know, so I kind of come back to this story personally. And I remember in the middle of this down season, we were doing one of the collective retreats that I teach at, and the collective retreats are so draining to me because I teach four times, and there's all this, you know, it's just a lot. And I remember at the end of the collective retreat, I had finished the last message, and the band was playing, and I looked up to God, and I'm like, God, why do I feel so far from you? Like, what's going on? Like, why do I feel so disconnected from you right now? And as they were playing this song, I just closed my eyes, and I just imagined heaven. I just started picturing heaven. And I saw Jesus up there, and I saw, you know, everybody's happy, and everything is, like, complete, and there's no suffering. And I just thought, Jesus, all I want to do is be up there with you. That's all I want. All I want is to be up there with you. Why can't I be up there with you right now? And I reached out my right hand, and Jesus reached out his hand, and I took his hand. And as soon as I took his hand, in my imagination, I felt this little voice that said, look at your left hand. Look at your left hand. So I looked over at my left hand, and I realized that my left hand was my buddy that didn't know Jesus. And when I looked at his left hand, was another friend. And when I looked at his hand, it was another friend. It was like a barrel of monkeys, you know what I mean, trying to get them all up. And I felt God say to my heart, Josiah, that's why you can't be in heaven right now. I got a mission for you. Go and make disciples. And besides, Josiah, if you want to be close to me, be close to them. The Bible is so clear. I'm the closest to the person that is the furthest away. If you want my heart, run after my kids. And because you can't have God's heart if you don't run after God's kids. And right there I realized, okay, that's my life. Until the day I die, until the day the Lord calls me home, that's my calling. But listen, that's not just my calling, that's your calling. That is every single follower of Jesus. Look, I think there's three people in the room right now. I want to talk to each of the three people. Here's the first person. If you have not given your life to Jesus, if you have not given your life to Jesus, I just want to ask you a question. Do you know how much your Father loves you? Do you know how much your Father loves you? Listen, the point of today for you is not to go tell other people about Jesus. Don't just forget all that. It's irrelevant. Do you know that you have a Father in heaven that's on a rescue mission to save you? You know, it's really easy to, you know, I talk to a lot of people that will say, well, I have so much shame, and I feel so unworthy, and I've made all these mistakes, and I feel so undeserving of God. And listen, that's true. You do have all that shame. So do I. all of us have made a lot of mistakes, but here's what I think you're underestimating. I don't think you realize how much has been paid. The death of God pays off any debt. There's nothing you can do that makes it impossible for God to save you. You can be forgiven. Jesus has already died. The price has already been paid. But now your Father in heaven, while you're drowning, is reaching out to you in his boat. Have you taken his hand? Because if you take his hand, that will change your life. Here's the second group of people. If you're new to following Jesus, and sharing Jesus makes you super uncomfortable, I get it. Like, I totally understand it. You're like, I want to share. I just don't know how. I just want to comfort you with something. So Jesus gives his famous go and make disciples mission. But here's the last part that I think we forget all the time. The last part of the quote is, and surely I am with you always. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. You know what that means? When you're sitting down for coffee with that one friend, Jesus is in the chair, you know, right next to you. And when you're having that conversation with that person in your neighborhood, Jesus is at the other mailbox. He is with you always. This is not something he's asking us to do for him. This is something he's asking us to do with him, to unite our hearts together. And so if that's you, and if you're nervous, I have a challenge for you. You don't have to take this challenge, but I think you should. I have a challenge for you. I challenge you, before this service is over, to just text one person that you care about that you want to share Jesus with. And here's what I want you to do. I just want you to send them this text or a text like this. I took a screenshot. So send them something like this. Hey, bro, or whatever girls say. I don't know how girls start texts, but hey, bro, I would love to tell you about something big that's happened in my life. Are you free this week? Just start it that way. That way the prompt is already there. You're not waiting for the conversation to move around, nothing like that. Hey, bro, I would love to tell you about something big that's happened in my life. Are you free this week? And when you sit down at Starbucks or Portal West, probably Portal West, anyway, when you sit down, just share the story. Just share what Jesus has done in your life. Actually, in the Rooted book, if you have one or you can still get one, in the Rooted book, it lays out how to write out your story, how to share your story. If you're super nervous, use that Rooted book and like take it with you. And be like, hey, I wrote down my thoughts. I would just love to share this with you. But share with them what Jesus has done in their life so that in your life, so Jesus can do the same thing in their life. Last group. If you've been following Jesus for a long time, for a while, but sharing Jesus is not a regular thing in your life. And hear me on regular. I mean regular. Not once every 6 months. This is the number one task. If that's not the case, I have two questions and a challenge. Here's the first one. And I mean this with no judgment. I ask myself this all the time. So hear this neutrally, not judgmentally. Are you sure that your heart has been changed? Because I'll be real, I am the world's worst evangelist. For years of my life, I would beat myself up. I'm not sharing Jesus with enough people. What's wrong with me? I'm an awful Christian. I would beat myself up. And some of you right now, that's what you're doing. You're just beating yourself up. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do it this week. And you're going to force yourself to talk to someone. And then you're going to chicken out, right? And you're not going to do it. And then maybe that lasts for a couple days and then it goes away. And that's what I did for years. And it all changed 6 years ago. 6 years ago, I went into a monumental depression. And in the middle of that monumental depression, God revealed to me that I was way more loved by him than I could have ever dreamed. I was way worse than I thought I was, but I was way more loved by him than I could have ever dreamed. And when God showed that to me, my heart filled up with so much of his love that every conversation I'm having turned into a Jesus conversation. And I'm talking to all these random people that I never talked to before, and I'm giving random people rides because I'm like, well, we're in the car for 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, and I'm still not good at it, bro. I'm still not good at it, but I want to. Because Jesus says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so maybe your next step this week is not go and try and talk to three people about Jesus. Maybe that's not your next step. Maybe your next step is open up the Bible. And ask God, Jesus, will you show me the real you? Because I don't know that I am as changed by you as I think I am, but I want to be. Show me your love. Show me your love for me. And then show me your love for everybody else. Now, if you're confident about sharing Jesus, if you're confident about your relationship with Jesus, for everybody else, I just have a question, and it's just a fair question. What is the actual mission of your life? It's for everybody. What is the actual mission of your life? Are you on a rescue mission every day? Are you on a rescue mission every day? And if Jesus, if you love Jesus and you know Jesus and you know Jesus's love for you, but you aren't sharing Jesus with as many people as you want to, here's my challenge. Here you go. Ready? I want you to text before this service is over. I want you to actually text three people. And maybe these are three people that you know this conversation probably should have happened a long time ago. And text them with the same prompt I gave earlier. Hey, you know, I want to tell you about something big that God's doing in my life. Are you free this week? I just want you to text three people. You don't have to do it. This is completely up to you. But text three people to share what Jesus has done into your life. And from now on, tomorrow morning, for the rest of your life, you are on a rescue mission everywhere you go. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. Will you pray with me while the band comes up? Jesus, Jesus, would you let us be so overwhelmed by your love and so overwhelmed by what you've done for us in the best way possible, like joyful, excited, that we can't help but tell other people. Jesus, I pray for any person in this room that does not know you, God, I pray that that changes. God, I pray for all of us that do know you, I pray that we just live on mission. In the same way you sacrificed for us, in the same way that you suffered for us, would you let us be willing to do that through love for the people around us? Jesus, we want to love you, but you love us so much more. I pray that we can understand that in these next few songs. In your name, amen.